This is Gina Marie Rodriguez, and you're listening to the Jersey Arts Podcast. How often have I said to you that when you have eliminated the impossible, whatever remains, however improbable, must be the truth? That's a quote from Sherlock Holmes, by way of Sir Arthur Conan Doyle in The Sign of the Four. If you'll forgive me, it feels only right to read Sherlock with an English accent, you know? Now, as improbable as it may seem, the truth is the ever-popular Sherlock Holmes died. The main character. He was it. That guy died. And then, 10 years later, he came back to life. Imagine just how frustrated his devoted fans were at the time. Well, in honor of this shocking story, East Lynne Theatre in Cape May will be reviving the two stories that tell the tale of Holmes' demise and subsequent revival. Written by Mark Lang, this new adaptation of Doyle's The Final Problem and The Adventure of the Empty House, the books in which we learn of the aforementioned death and resurrection of a beloved detective, will be presented radio-style on East Lynne's stage at the historic Cape May Presbyterian Church. Today I spoke with Watson and Holmes themselves, Mark Lang and Joseph Travers. Check out our conversation to learn more about the new show, The Death of Sherlock Holmes, Cape May, and some fun Sherlock Holmes trivia. Well, hello, gentlemen. It is so nice to have you here today. Thank you so much for being with me.
Well, thank you for having us.
Thank you for your interview.
Absolutely. My pleasure. If you don't mind just introducing yourselves and your role in this show to our audience.
My name is Mark Edward Lang, and I have basically put much of this together. I'm the playwright. I did the adaptation. I'm also directing and performing.
And I am Joseph Travers, and I'll be playing the role of Sherlock Holmes.
Yeah.
Very exciting. I don't want to say I'm like a huge fan of Sherlock Holmes because that would be a lie, but I remember reading Sherlock Holmes when I was younger and thinking, oh, this is an author I actually don't hate. I should start that by saying I didn't like reading as a kid. So this was a big deal for me to find a book that I actually liked. And if I can recall, it was, I'm going to butcher the title. It was Sherlock Holmes and the Case of the Baskerville Hounds?
Hound of the Baskervilles. Yeah.
Thank you for correcting me. That was a good one. I'd love to hear a little bit about your experience, both of you, with Sherlock Holmes. When did you discover him? When did you fall in love with him, become a fan, et cetera, et cetera?
Well, it's interesting because, you know, talk about being a teenager. It's basically I was given the complete works, and which I still have. And it's immense. I mean, because there were, you know, 4 novels, 56 stories. I looked at it. It's 1,100 pages. So for, you know, a teenager to kind of go, you know, I don't know if I'm going to make it through all that. But so it's sort of been like a come back to thing. I mean, I think everybody knows the character and actually as of last year, everything is now public domain. So you're going to see more and more adaptations and changes and different versions of it. Though in this case, I wanted to be very faithful to the original. I thought, let's hear Conan Doyle's words as much as possible. And I will kind of massage them as needed and put it into this, you know, live radio format and have fun with it, which is really what the actors are doing. And when the actors have fun, the audience has fun. And that's definitely why we're all here.
I didn't know that he just entered the public domain. That's exciting.
And neither did I, actually. That's great.
It's because he wrote over the course of 40 years, it's taken time. But I think just last year, the last of the stories are now open to the public's interpretation. So I was, because about 2 years ago, I've been working with East Lynne Theater for years in Cape May is what we're talking about. And they've been doing these Sherlock Holmes radio style readings for many, many years. And there were times when they would repeat something they had produced before. And I said, well, you know, I can take a shot at this. So I, you know, got the okay and went to the oeuvre and said, okay, now where do I start? There's 1,100 pages here. So basically I thought, well, where's the drama? And there was a point where Conan Doyle was tired of writing it as successful as it was from the very beginning, both here and in the UK. So I want to kill off this character. He'd been talking about it for a while and eventually said, okay, I'm going to kill off this character. I'm going to call this story the final problem, and he's going to die, and then I'll be done. And of course, there's more that happened after that. So, and you know, One Piece was not long enough for a full evening. So I said, okay, let's pair it with The Return Of, which is the story he wrote years later, The Adventure of the Empty House, where, you know, out of nowhere, Watson is sort of looking into this crime, and all of a sudden, who shows up out of nowhere but his friend Holmes, who he thought been dead for years. So there's lots of drama in there, and actually a surprising amount of emotion, which you kind of don't associate with these characters, that the loss of this dear friend of his and the return of this friend, you know, who he had thought was, you know, was, he was there, you know, he wasn't there for the actual encounter with Moriarty, but you know, he heard firsthand that they had fallen. And so it was a really good place to start. It takes a while to put something like this together, but it was definitely worth the effort.
Before I ask Joseph what your experience with Sherlock Holmes is, Mark, how long did this process take you to adapt?
I've written a number of plays over the years, kind of on and off since, you know, really high school, college, here and there. But there tends to be kind of a stop start. You know, you're working on it for a while, then you take some time off, you come back to it, have another look at it, say, you know, how's it, kind of finish the first part first, to see how that played and how it timed out. So it probably took about a year, you know, maybe a little less from start to finish. And then when you're in rehearsal, then you can make some tweaks. And then in terms of radio, you need to have sound effects, and all that needs to be worked into the script as well. So, you know, there are a lot of layers to it in the process.
Wow. Honestly, a year is less time than I thought you were going to say. I think a year is pretty
well,
pretty good.
I wrote a play for my wife and I, you know, I decided I was going to write a play for the two of us, a two-hander about the famous acting couple Lunt and Fontanne, who people have heard of because there's a Broadway theater named after them, but people don't know almost anything about them because they did all their work on the stage. They had one film in their prime in 1931. And so that project took 7 years of on and off before we finally finished it, got it produced, and so on. So, you know, these things can take a much longer time.
Absolutely. Wow. 7 years. And I mean, not that I want to pivot, I just remember hearing that Hamilton had taken Lin-Manuel 9 years or something like that. So those were the numbers I was thinking.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And it's ideally, it's something that you workshop, and in our case, we need to get a good director on board to, you know, have another eye on it, another ear on it. And the timing was good because our friend had been teaching and had, you know, had some time to work on our project. And so we had to jump on it. And yeah, it's funny because I started my theater in high school in New York at Hunter High, which is where Lin-Manuel also went to school and taught there. Though he's just a little younger than me, but I can brag on him even though we've never met.
It counts. Yes, you can. Well, Joseph, how about you? What is your Holmes experience like before this show?
Well, you know, Doyle's been one of those writers that I've revisited periodically. I also read Hound of the Baskervilles probably around the same time as you, like late elementary school, early high school, somewhere around there. There was a film, I think a TV film, that had been of the same story, which I was really fascinated by. And then I read a few more of the stories after that and got into it for a while, read them all. And then as a young actor, I got cast in a stage production of Hound of the Baskervilles as Holmes. And so went back through the whole process again of reading all of Holmes, and fell in love with the Jeremy Brett BBC version of Holmes, watched all of them. And then during the lockdown, I went through Holmes again because I thought, oh, this would be great. I'll read all of Holmes again. And I read some of the apocryphal stuff that they're not sure whether Doyle wrote, or they think maybe his son wrote it. And then some newer authors addressing the same characters. So I kind of got into it all again. So it was quite a wonderful coincidence that after all of that, Mark reached out and asked me to play this part, because it's certainly been a part that has fascinated me for a really long time. So hopefully I'm somewhat prepared.
I love that backstory so much. You're returning to your roots.
I should
love
be
it.
Asking you questions,
That's
Joe.
That's what it feels like, yeah.
You read the 1,100 pages, man, twice.
Over time. I mean,
I'm very impressed.
Not in a weekend.
Well, Joe and I have known each other for many years. And so when this came up, I thought, who do I know, who I've worked with, who can handle this role? And as it turns out, Joe has worked with us at Eastland Theater a couple of times as a fight director. He's a very, speaking of multi-hyphenates, which we all, many of us in the theater are multi-hyphenates. Joe is a very talented fight director and teacher, runs his own theater company in New York. So I said he can handle this. So I reached out and I was very pleased to hear that he was available.
I'm glad that you get to work together now. I think that's really exciting. Can I ask what led this to becoming a radio play as opposed to a full staged production?
Well, the backstory is actually a Kate May thing. So Eastland Theater, my wife and I met at Eastland Theater in 2001. So even though I'm a New Yorker, I'm an honorary South Jerseyan as well, because she's a Jersey girl and her parents are there and we love coming back and forth. As long as the drive is. You may know that, Cape May is full of beautiful Victorian era houses from the 1880s to the 1910s. And the branding that the town, actually the whole town, the city was landmarked in 1976, which to my knowledge, no one had ever done before, because they didn't want the developers to tear down these beautiful old houses. And they were starting to. And so a friend of ours at the theater, Bruce Minix, was the mayor at the time. And he basically said, we're going to landmark the entire city. And that's what they did. So since then, they've been using that since, it is supposedly America's oldest seaside resort. For those of you who have not been, it was a Victorian Cape May. So some genius in town had said, well, let's do a Sherlock Holmes weekend. And that was MAC, which is a nonprofit in Cape May. And then the theater company basically said, well, if they're doing a Sherlock Holmes weekend, then we should take advantage of that as well. And so for over 20 years, this is actually, part of a long line of radio style productions that Eastland has put together. And so I'm kind of sort of the latest in the chain as far as doing this adaptation and thinking ahead to, some new material for next year. But it's there's a simplicity of it as well. I mean, one of the challenges for any theater company is, what's your budget? How much time do you have? How much money do you have? How much housing do you have if you're bringing actors in from out of town? So, so there's a practical side to it, but the other side of it is that it's just so much fun, and that, one can close their eyes and sort of get pulled into it. And, what is radio theater? It's like podcasts. It's like, it's storytelling. So there's something very primal about it. And in our case, we bring it back to the period, because there was a Sherlock Holmes radio show that broadcast out of New York for close to 20 years. And so we're bringing everybody back to 1938. So there's period music leading in, there are period commercials that add a little, bit of fun to it. So you get a little bit of everything in addition to the sound effects and the drama, So we're very much looking forward to it.
Wow, everything you just said sounds amazing. And as someone who has not yet had the pleasure of visiting Cape May, I feel like I learned quite a bit there.
Oh, you have to. You have to. Anybody in the area has to go, whether you're in the Philly area or it's in Jersey, New York City. There's no place quite like it. That we've got the ocean right there. And just so, like, walk down the side streets and you're just taken back 100 years. It's extraordinary.
Well, maybe your show is a good excuse to go.
Absolutely. Come on down. You can be our guest.
It sounds like a plan to me. Now I have to stop myself from singing Be Our Guest from Beauty and the Beast. Oh, focus, Gina. So, Joseph, I'm going to ask you, what led you to the theater? What was your journey to becoming an actor, or in Mark's case, writer, director of this piece? But Joseph, I know that you're also wearing multiple hats as well. So theater is a broad scope of everything that you do, but what brought you to the theater?
I think, I had a love of plays and of reading plays from elementary school. We we in our school, we, as a lot of schools did, I'm sure, we read plays in class and we were all given parts. I was a pretty good reader, so I enjoyed that. I got some really good parts that way. And then I love to go see theater. We went on school trips where we went to see theater, which was wonderful and very inspiring. And then I went to school for science. I was a physics major, but I wound up starting to do theater in high school. And then when I went away to college, I was very involved in the theater while I was studying physics, and finally realized I'm actually headed in not the direction I want to go in. I want to go in this direction. And so switched schools and I went to school for theater and kind of never looked back. I've been involved in one way or another as an actor, as a director, as a playwright. I've spent 30 plus years as a fight director and stage combat teacher. And there's something about the ability to be part of an experience that happens live in front of other people, in which everyone, including the audience, is part of creating something that's unique every evening. Even though we rehearse, even though we prepare, even though we know, quote unquote, what we're going to do, we don't know what's going to happen because we don't know what the audience will experience and what their response will be. And they become a really important part of the whole experience. That circulation between audience and actor is so important. So I think that's certainly one of the big things that has drawn me to it, is that kind of magical experience of it being new every time.
What an important note. How important the audience itself is and what you guys bring. I'm talking to our listeners now. You guys bring a lot every time you come to see a show. That energy that the audience brings is what feeds actors, I think.
And absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, if there are two characters on stage, the third character is always the audience. And their energy feeds our energy. And if we're having fun, they're having fun. And if they're listening intently, as they almost always are, there's just nothing like it. I mean, I love movies. I love television. But being in the theater, you know, even as an audience member, when they take the bows at the end, it just, there is something magical about it. So I agree with Joe on that.
Live theater is unique in its own way. And I hope that everyone listening will travel to you, but will also travel to their local theaters. You know, let's not lose this art form, right? I think COVID threw us all for a loop when we weren't able to go to theaters for a while. And now that they're back, I know that, you know, some local theaters are still struggling. So let's just get out there and go see theater because it's amazing. And why not?
Definitely, definitely. And speaking of multi-hyphenates, I think I should mention Arthur Conan Doyle was trained as a medical doctor, which some people may not know, not unlike Dr. Watson. And then he found his thing when he started writing stories and selling them to magazines, and then they would be compiled into books. And so, I mean, frankly, my understanding is his medical practice was not super successful, but his writing certainly was. And so, you know, he pivoted, as one might say. And as I mentioned earlier, he was so successful with Sherlock Holmes that, you know, he had written all these other, you know, types of works, and was much more proud of them than Holmes. But he got pulled back. And, you know, once he brought I think it was another 20 years he was writing Sherlock Holmes stories after the character was revived. So I guess, you know, he had to sort of learn to love the character as much as everybody else did.
Well, that's another way in which I suppose Joseph is similar to Arthur Conan Doyle, both with a science background and then led you right into the arts.
Well, there you go. I am not a scientist at all. I have many engineers in my family, including my dad, who was also artistic. But he appreciated the arts. He did beautiful drawings and paintings as a young man and played little classical guitar. And, you know, So, you know, it's cool to, and my grandfather as well was from Germany and played the zither on 86th Street and copied out scores, beautiful calligraphy. So he was a visual artist and a musician as well. As for myself, I grew up in New York, but we didn't see a lot of theater growing up. But I was fascinated by the process, particularly of film and television. Like, how is that put together? and mentioning Star Trek. As a young man, I read this book called The Making of Star Trek, where they went into all the writing and the design and the scripting, and I just thought, this is incredible. So when I was in high school, they had the worst video equipment in the world, but I signed up for TV production class and was writing and directing and performing and doing graphics for videos, sometimes, comedy videos and things. And then my friend was sort of like the dealer who said, man, you got to try live stage, man. I'm like, no, I don't want to be in front of all those people. And no, really, you should try it, man. And the rest is history. I started doing theater. I wound up majoring in theater at Vassar College, learning the old school from three old hands who'd been there forever, doing scenic design, doing directing and acting, and Everett Sprinchorn, who was a master of dramatic literature and history, many of whom had been there since Meryl Streep was there back in the 70s. So I'll drop her name also. But so that was sort of how I got into the theater thing. And I was, I guess, lucky in that I was able to come back home to New York and start auditioning without having to make the move, as so many actors do in New York.
Well, shout out to Meryl and your wife, all the Jersey girls that we're mentioning here.
That's right. That's right.
I love that film and television was your gateway medium, so to speak, your gateway to theater. It's usually, well, I shouldn't say it's usually the other way around. It was the other way around for me. I'll say that. I can't speak for anyone else. But I was a theater major in school, and then I somehow pivoted to film and television. So there you have it. We are polar opposites here.
But they're the same thing, and to the extent that it's all about the storytelling. It's all about touching an audience, making them laugh, making them cry, making them, making their heartbeat faster. I mean, one of the things
Absolutely.
about Sherlock Holmes is people have this fascination with murder and figuring out puzzles, and it's certainly true in the podcast world, and which you can see in like Only Murders in the Building, which kind of takes the podcast world and the murder mystery world and mushes them together with comedy elements. There's so much to be mined there.
You two have known each other for a while, as you said. So I'd just like to know, what are you looking forward to in working together on this show?
I Mark's waiting for me to respond first. 1984, I think that, or five, one of the two.
85, I think, actually.
85.
Yeah, a long hell of a
At
time
the New York
ago.
Renaissance Festival is where we first met and worked together as actors together. So it's been a very long, wonderful journey. And one of the most fun things about Mark, beyond the fact that we're both Star Trek fans and a little geeky about that, and that we're not, it's always fun for a Star Trek fan to find another person that they can talk Star Trek with, because a lot of people just kind of, you see the glaze go over their eyes when you start. But also, we've had a lot of wonderful experiences of sort of a comic back and forth between the two of us. So I think it's great that we're playing Holmes and Watson in a context where there isn't a lot of comedy for us to have back and forth about. I'm sure we will enjoy rehearsals in that way, but when we're actually performing, I think it'll be great for us to be able to bounce things off of each other in serious contexts for a change.
Well, and just
It's
to build
wonderful work,
on,
Mark. So I'm
well, that's, Joe's a gem and so talented, and it's a, people kind of get busy with their own things, so you don't always get a chance to spend time with old friends. So this is a chance to kind of go side by side, and
absolutely.
in the story, there are these two characters who've known each other for years, and so we can build that into this presentation as well, which is so cool. And maybe we'll work some Star Trek jokes into it, because Leonard Nimoy also played Sherlock
You
Holmes.
did.
He did. Just
Oh,
another fun fact.
I did not know that. That's fantastic.
And
This
if
is
you
why
think
I
about
love it.
the character of Spock, is very logical. There's some Sherlock Holmes elements in there that built into it from the beginning. Very stoic, that sort of thing. So you can see the connection.
This is the kind of Star Trek trivia I didn't know that I needed.
But you
You're
do. You absolutely do, Gina.
going to have to sell me on Star Trek later. But first, How about you sell our audience on your show? How would you like to speak directly to our audience and let them know that they should come to see this show?
Well, let's start with Cape May. We're talking a little bit about Cape May. Cape May is amazing. Eastland Theater has been around for over 40 years in South Jersey. We perform in this beautiful historic church right near the ocean. There are fantastic restaurants everywhere. There's shops. There's, the beach is right there. So that's the first part. The second part is this show is full of fun. It's full of, if you, even if you know the stories, you maybe you don't know all the details of the stories. This is Holmes' arch nemesis Moriarty makes his biggest appearance basically, and who's behind this whole crime wave, and Holmes is the only one who knows that's going on. And so there's this whole cat and mouse game that they play, and they travel all over Europe. I mean, the way that Conan Doyle plotted it out, they follow each other around. They wind up in Switzerland of all places. By the way, I went on vacation last year to Switzerland, and my cousin said, "Oh, my cabin is right near Reichenbach Falls." And I said, "What?" So yeah, my mom is Swiss, and so I have Swiss cousins, and there I was, having been working on this script, and there was the Reichenbach Falls. So for those of you who come and you hear the sound of the Reichenbach Falls in our radio show, it is the actual sound of the actual Reichenbach Falls. I'm just
Wow, that's
saying there,
great.
that's authenticity. Even though it just sounds like static, it's the real sound of the real Reichenbach Falls in Switzerland. So, but you get to see Joe Travers play the lead role. And so, what could be better? What could be a better way to spend a Friday or Saturday night in Cape May in
I'll be there
November?
for
Oh,
sure.
that's right.
I'm
Be there or
coming.
be square.
Oh my gosh, what an Easter egg that is. Speaking of sound, though, it's so important in a radio show. Is there a sound designer that you'd like to shout out? Or is that you also?
I would be me also. I mean, I love tech stuff. I was doing videos forever, and so digital audio is actually the person who I need to shout out to is my brother, who, speaking of multi-hyphenates, is a doctor. He's a veterinarian, but he's also loves music. And so when I needed a theme song, I thought maybe I'll ask Andrew if he wants to come up with something, and he came up with this delightful little bumper intro outro for the shows, including a little violin sound because Sherlock Holmes played the violin. And so I give the shout out to my brother Andrew. He did a fantastic job on that.
It's a family affair. That's fantastic. Joseph, would you like to add to that?
That it's a family affair, or
Or what you'd like to say to our audience?
I would say, in addition to everything that Mark just said, and having been to Cape May multiple times, I want to second everything he said about the atmosphere of Cape May. It really does feel like you're walking around in the past when you're walking around. And it's beautiful to be so close to the shore. And I for one, love to be near the beach in the fall, as opposed to in the summer when it's a little less crowded and it's wonderful and beautiful to walk along. In addition to that, I would say that the script that Mark has put together, bridging really two stories together in one evening, because as he mentioned earlier, these were separate tales, the tale in which we lose Holmes and then the tale in which we get him back. And he's bridged them into one story, one continuous story. And it is exciting, it is compelling. You get a taste of the relationship between Holmes and Watson that really gives a sense of the affection between them and also their ability to work together as a team. And you get a sense of Holmes's mind, which is incredibly perceptive. And at the same time, he's constantly having to adjust to changes because Moriarty and the people who are supporting Moriarty are the creme de la creme of crime. So he doesn't know all the answers already. And I think the conclusion of the piece, which I will not give away, is it's a great turn at the end of the story, and a wonderful way to finish it up, returning to what feels like Doyle agreeing with the audience that he's willing to continue writing this character now for, as Mark put it, another 20 years. So I would say the story itself and the way that Mark has dramatized it is a great reason to come and enjoy. In the frame of the radio play format, which is really a lot of fun. really come to it and enjoy the evening.
Well, I'm excited. I think it sounds like such an amazing production. And it's about time that I refamiliarize myself with Sherlock Holmes. I can't have only read that one book. That will not be enough for the rest of my lifetime. Although I
And it's
did.
like a podcast. You don't, you know, if you come to the show, you don't have to read those two stories because we, you know, we present them very faithfully, I must say.
Exactly. That's the way I can get around reading.
Let's see. I mentioned that Holmes is the most portrayed human literary character, according to the Guinness Book of World Records.
Ooh.
And I'm like wondering who's the most portrayed non-human literary character. But that's a question for another day. Supposedly there are, the other statistic was that there are 25,000 plus adaptations of Sherlock Holmes between stage, TV, film, and print. And so if we're 25,001, so be it. It's still a ton of fun. These characters are so rich. These puzzles, you know, are so have so many layers to them. And it's a great bunch of actors who are going to have a lot of fun presenting it. As I said, it's been a tradition now in Cape May for many years to do these radio style shows. There are other things going on that weekend that Cape May Mac has put together. So, you know, for those of you who have a free weekend in November, we're running for those 2 weekends, and you can find out more at eltc.info. Or eastlandtheater.org, where it's all laid out for you. And there's a Christmas show as well, Christmas Cabaret. So if you're there in early December, there's more going on before the end of the year.
Thank you so much. And I have to say, since this is a radio play, I have to comment on how wonderful both of your voices are. So I'm looking forward to hearing you again on stage.
Well, thank you. Should we do English now? Let's go English. All right. Yeah,
if you insist.
If you insist,
no
problem.
Can.
No problem. Yes, indeed.
Let's not
Thank
give
you.
Away the show, though, Watson.
No, certainly not, Holmes. Certainly not.
The Death of Sherlock Holmes runs 2 weekends only, Friday and Saturday, November 15th and 16th, and November 22nd and 23rd at 7 p.m. Please visit eastlandtheater.org for tickets and more information. If you like this episode, be sure to review, subscribe, and tell your friends. A transcript of this podcast, links relevant to the story, and more about the arts in New Jersey can be found at jerseyarts.com. The Jersey Arts Podcast is presented by Art Pride New Jersey, advancing a state of creativity since 1986. This show was co-founded by and currently supported by funds from the New Jersey State Council on the Arts, with additional support from the National Endowment for the Arts. This episode was hosted, edited, and produced by me, Gina Marie Rodriguez. Executive producers are Jim Atkinson and Isaac Cernadiaz. And my thanks to today's guests, Mark Lang and Joseph Travers, for their time. I'm Gina Marie Rodriguez for the Jersey Arts Podcast. Thanks for listening.